welcome to Check It Out, Comrade, an indie game podcast where every 2 weeks we bring you two indie games and tell you what we like about them. I'm Nick Lauber.
And I'm Gary Butterfield.
And this week we're doing Darkest Dungeon and Hotline Miami 2.
Wrong number.
Wrong number.
Yeah. Two exceedingly difficult games that neither of us have beat.
No.
So for those of you out there who are avoiding spoilers on them,
you're in luck.
Yeah, so are we, by not intentionally.
Yeah.
But we are avoiding them by not being good enough to get to them yet.
But also two, like, super incredible games I'm going to be playing the shit out of the next couple weeks still, so.
Yeah, this is a really good pairing. So, Nick, tell me what is cool about, let's start with Darkest Dungeon.
Okay, yeah, sure. Yeah, Darkest Dungeon is really rad. For those who don't know, it is a roguelike dungeon crawler type game, that was created by an indie studio named Red Hook Studios, so I think this is basically the only thing they've been known for. They kickstarted it, if I remember correctly. And it's really, really difficult and an incredibly engaging game with, like, cool, like, not quite sanity meter, but basically sanity meter mechanics across your whole team as you explore all these dungeons. So not only can you die really easily, but you can also go crazy and get good or negative effects based on that. And so it's just a real solid, brutally difficult dungeon crawler with, you know, it's not your typical dungeon crawler. It's like a turn-based side-scrolling. Almost every battle is kind of a Final Fantasy-style JRPG battle.
It's a JRPG with a lot more options
and
kind of tactics in part of it. Like if a JRPG came out with this combat system, I'd be really into it.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot to it. It kind of defies description. Like it is it has elements of Rogue Legacy where you are gaining, upgrades that you apply to your town and kind of your infrastructure, as permanent. And then, permadeath. So those are the roguelike elements. I don't know if the maps are randomized.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they are. Okay. I started a couple different games, and I'm pretty sure they're all randomized.
And your characters have randomized skills as well.
Yeah.
Out of their group. But it is a thing where it has this very, very deep turn-based combat system, and then something where you have to keep just as much track of the mental health of your characters as the physical health, in a way that feels really earned. It is trying to sit across this oppressive atmosphere, and it does it like really well in this way. Like the idea of your guys kind of snapping, like you are constantly being forced to make really difficult decisions, whether like, you know, you send somebody in this horrific place, they fight a bunch of horrific monsters. They're the worst for wear. They don't want to go back, but they're your best, you know, your best healer or your best. Yeah. So you're not going to be successful unless you sacrifice the mental health. And then that in turn negatively impacts you for making those. So it just, it creates this real kind of feedback loop of feeling shitty and being forced to make shitty decisions to your little avatars.
Yeah.
In a way that kind of reminded me of This War of Mine.
A little bit. Yeah.
Like, it's like, oh, this guy's really sad. He doesn't want to go out tonight, but I have to send him out. I had that experience all the time in Darkest Dungeon.
Yeah, I agree. Another cool thing about the like sanity system in this one too is that as they get insane and even just kind of for going through a dungeon, they get permanent effects that they might make them take more damage from certain types of creatures, or they can be positive. They can actually make you do more, but you kind of compile as you send these guys out. More and more of these mostly negative status effects. So they get better at fighting. They have better equipment, better stats, and more abilities. But they're also chock full of all these negative...
Like neuroses.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're damaged people. And, like, there's a huge variety of negative things. Like, because we brought up Rogue Legacy, and Rogue Legacy has those little quirks, but they feel like that. Like, they're just, like, quirks.
Right.
But these are really neat. Like, they're not just statistical bonuses, like, you know, plus 10%, minus 9%, you know, damage to X or Y. There's really neat ones. Like, I was playing with my B team recently, and I have this Lady Barbarian, and she's the strongest person, so she went in, and I sent her in when she was a little bit, you know, probably could have stood some R&R, and ended up going crazy and became abusive. And what that meant was every time one of my other characters failed an action, she would insult them. And that affected their sanity negatively. Like, it had huge repercussions. Like, it doesn't, you can't like everything has a real intense feeling of consequence.
Yeah.
In this game, that's really, really cool. And I'm like, man, you need to cut it out. Like, he's doing his best. And then I had one guy, one of the guys you start with, the highwayman,
mm-hmm.
Who's been with me, you know, for the beginning. He was along, and for some reason, he was just looking out and reacting to every time he kind of went insane with a positive thing.
Nice.
So he kept saying, like, she would call him out, and then he was just like, I just have to try harder, and, like, would get a boost.
Nice.
To it. So, like, it's a really interesting, like, form of characterization for what are essentially just little random collection of stats.
Yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Like, it's so, like, one more attorney. Like, yeah. Just like, oh, I can just do one more delve down in these dungeons. Like,
it's hard to stop.
Yeah, it's sure. Super hard to stop.
And it's not like a delve is a short amount of time either. Like, it takes a good hour, if not more, to get through a dungeon.
Yeah, depending on the goal. Like, it does a good job of breaking those up.
Yeah,
it does. Like, you have different things you can be doing, and some of which are harder and some of which are easier. We also would be remiss if we didn't talk about the lighting mechanic, which is really cool.
Yes.
Which sets up this risk-reward system where the better lit it is, the more your guys feel comfortable, which is great, but you get worse loot because, you know, more stronger monsters aren't around.
Yeah.
So if you want to kind of go on easy mode, if you stock up on torches, go at it. But then the other thing is you want to only buy the amount of stuff that you're going to use because it doesn't carry over.
Right.
Which I didn't realize the first time I went down and just like bought the farm. Cause I was like, oh, I might need this. I might need this. Like thinking I could keep this stuff.
Right.
And you can't. So you really, it's like a constant sense of this kind of gambling.
Yeah.
You know, as to what you think you can get away with, you know, the minimum to get through the dungeon. Super, super cool.
Yeah. The lighting has cool effects too. I think actually, so there's like four stages of lighting. I think your torch actually depletes the fastest in the best one because mm-hmm. it's burning the brightest. And in that one, like you said, you face easier monsters. You have a chance to surprise the other, whatever you come up against in the dungeon, which gives your guys kind of first run and get a first attack in before the other guys get around. But if you fall below that top one, then your guys kind of just start collectively on a random basis getting more and more crazy just through the darkness.
Yeah, just being scared.
Yeah.
From these different areas. It's really good. And the classes are really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just kind of stock D&D classes. Like, they're really weird ones. And they all have kind of cool niches. Like, there's a lot of variety you can have in setting up different class combos.
Yeah.
Which is it just really impressive. Like, just weirdly very, very deep, like, right from the get-go, and doesn't reveal exactly how cool it is right away, you know, which I really like.
And it's still technically early access too, which this is a fully fledged goddamn game.
Yeah, I can't wait for them to do more shit with it. Like,
yeah,
we play a lot of games for the show and for other podcasts in the network. I play a lot of games, and sometimes like I don't go back to them. Like, there are a lot of games that like, oh, you know, that was really cool, but I played a couple hours and I'll get back to it someday.
Yeah,
and this is something where it's like once I started it kind of late, and then once I did, like, I just keep wanting to play it. Yeah, it's like, it's very, very fun.
Comrade is just our retirement archive, so we can go back and find all the games we want to play when we retire.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like, when all the kids are sitting around with their, like, Oculus 7s, and we're just, you know, like, finally trying to beat the last boss of Rogue Legacy.
Yeah.
Which I actually did, you know, finally did, but, like, that's a bad example. But lots of games that we've done, you know, for the show.
Yeah,
that,
a lot of games we played enough to find out they were great.
I never beat Broforce.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to. Exactly. It's good, but, you know, it just hasn't happened. So yeah, super, super cool. And really high recommendation.
Yeah. Darkest Dungeon. It's out on Windows, OS X, Linux, and it's also on PS4 and Vita now. So,
Man, this on Vita.
Yeah. Right.
That's insane. Like, that's almost enough reason to get a Vita between that and Isaac, even though Isaac is coming to 3DS.
Yeah. I saw the teaser from Tyra,
which is super cool. Like, that's going to be dangerous.
That's going to be really dangerous.
Yeah. But all right. Yeah, very good.
Let's talk about probably the quickest turnaround we've ever had on a game.
Yeah. Aren't you proud of us? We're a new show now.
Hotline Miami 2. Wrong number.
Yeah, this is equal to Hotline Miami. Hotline Miami is one of the games I've always wanted to talk about for the show, but it's just been a little bit old,
yeah.
And we knew this was coming out.
Right. So it's the sequel to Hotline Miami. It's a game made by Donation Games, who I'm pretty sure is just Cactus and the other guy, and the two games they've made together they released under this title. It's available on OS X, Linux, Windows, PS3, 4, and Vita. And it is a two D top down, like murder simulator. It seriously is just about rampaging through a place and trying to kill as many people as you can before getting killed. Mm-hmm. If you haven't played the first one, I just gave you everything you need to know. Except it's got this incredibly cool late '80s, early '90s aesthetic, and this really well done soundtrack done by both games I'm speaking of. Soundtracks done by a bunch of electronic artists who just perfectly set the tone. And it's got this weird kind of drug-fueled mafia feeling story that has interweaved between both games, and it's very, very well done.
Yeah, it's like a neon underground kind of thing. It's like the comparison to Drive.
Yes.
Gets Drive made a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It has one of the best, like, most unified aesthetics of a game I've seen in a long time, where like the sound and the like kind of lilting, nauseating visuals and what you're actually doing in the game like work together really perfectly. Because it is a hypnotizing experience. Like it is probably the best example that I can think of like the kind of iterative gameplay where like you're just doing something over and over and over to get it perfect, similar to like, and you do that in like Meat Boy,
right,
or something like that. And similar to Meat Boy, they remove all barriers to doing that. So the consequence for failure, you get to start over right away.
Yeah.
Like it's immediate. You just get to keep trying things until they work. And it's very easy to like get into a zone between the kind of music and visuals.
Mm-hmm.
And then the game plays with that too, by kind of like the first one, there's a couple different interpretations of the first one, but one of the big things is like, hey, video game violence, you know, it's bad, is one of the like easier interpretations to it. And that, I don't think that's all they were saying in that game, but it is playing with the contrast of, you know, feeling the fun of committing violence and then dealing with the after effect of it.
Yeah, definitely.
That's
a huge theme in the first one. The first one, you pretty much play, if I remember correctly, and it's been a while since I played, and I don't even think I beat it, but you play as the same character who's, you know, committing these crimes and is like haunted by these masked, you know, guys who are convincing him to run out murders, and gets calls to do hits, and it's kind of this one big, like, drug fueled story of mayhem that is really well done. This one kind of interweaves a few different stories, all kind of revolving around some of the same stuff, but from different viewpoints. That I don't think that was done in the first one, if I remember correctly.
The first one has a nod to that at the very end. Like the last like few missions do a little bit of that. This one is doing a lot of weird metatextual stuff because the events of the first game happened in this game. And some of the characters that you're dealing with is in this are characters inspired by or related to the events.
Yeah.
In the first game.
Right.
But it's really Rashomon-y. Like you're following four different groups and you go back and forth between the 60s, the 80s, and the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
In a way that I haven't figured out what actually happened in the story yet.
Yeah. I'm going to wait for someone. I'm going to beat the game and then have to watch someone's YouTube coverage of like.
Yeah.
Checking every detail.
Yeah, because it is very complicated, and like the it's a much longer game than the first one. I'm on mission 22 of 25, so I'm actually fairly close to beating it. But something that I don't think we mentioned before is it is hard.
Yeah, oh my god, it's like fucking hard.
It is. It's interesting. It's like a sequel that just picks up the ball as soon as the first one ended. Like it presumes that you've beat the first one and succeeded at it. Like the first level of this game is like the, you know, 16th level of the first game.
It throws you into big rooms with a bunch of people. The interesting thing about this game, so it's like we said, it's a top-down game, and you know you have to kind of run around and know what the general patterns of different bad guys in the place that you're going into are, but it's not like a cycle perfect thing where each time you start everyone's going to be exactly where they were last time. They're going to be close, and there's some guys that are on pretty you know, easily timed cycles, but other times it'll just be that one guy who's out of place who fucks your whole route that you had going for the past like five attempts.
Yeah. Yeah. There's like a degree of randomness that is just enough.
Yeah.
Like if it was entirely random, it'd be meaningless.
Right.
If it were entirely static, it would cease to be fun. It would just be trial and error. This has room for chaos to where, like, if something doesn't go according to plan, that doesn't mean you're fucked.
Right.
Like, you can actually adjust for it quick enough, and it feels awesome when
you do. It feels so good.
Yeah.
It's so rewarding in that way. I've never had another game that's just like, I managed to cope with this thing that happened so fast, and I responded to it, and it feels fucking amazing.
Yeah. It is a real serious continuing sine wave of, like, tension and release, yeah. Like, getting through it. And then when you get to, and that's, you know, shadowed in the narrative, too, where, like, the kind of thing the series is, one of the first things that was noteworthy to me about the first one is after you go through these houses and murder all these people, you have to walk back. Like, the level doesn't just end.
Right.
And you get this kind of sad tone and just walk through the carnage you just created.
Yeah.
And that's like the game giving you a chance to breathe after winding you up like that. And it's really ingenious. Like, it's just everything fire. It's the gameplay and narrative working in concert, which is something whenever that happens, I just feel, you know, it's worth pointing out.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very, like, I would say, like, as far as recommendation stuff go, because it's hard to say whether I like it more or less than the first one without mm-hmm. having beat it. The first one's going to get credit for being the first one, obviously. There are some things I think are kind of improvements.
Yeah.
In this one, like, there are some neat innovations mechanically, some new kind of character concepts and stuff and level concepts that they add in. But it is a sequel where, like, this is for, if you like the first one, this is more of it and at least as good.
Right.
You know, and that works for me because after I beat Hotline Miami, I was like, that was great. I want to play more of that.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Definitely a game made for fans of the first one and not, you know, just a sequel to sell more to a newer audience. Like, this is definitely expecting you to have played Hotline Miami 1.
Yeah, it's not innovating that much. It knows what it does. What's also cool, and it's not out yet, but they're doing a level editor for it.
Nice.
Which I'm always, like, I don't always indulge in that all that often. Like, I still haven't played any homemade Shadow and Return things, even though a couple of them have come to fruition. But I love that that's an option because, like, again, that retirement thing, like, someday I'll have enough time to play infinite games.
Yeah.
And I'll find a level pack of somebody who did really cool Hotline Miami levels.
Yep.
And we already said it, but the soundtrack is unbelievable. Like, yeah. The soundtrack is as good as the first one. It took a little while for it to, like, kind of reveal its colors, but the first one also, like, not every song is a standout, but they're both soundtracks I have on my phone.
They're top notch soundtracks.
Yeah, it's so good.
My mom, you know, back in Arizona, she asked me last month what I wanted for my birthday, and I told her I'm kind of amassing this vinyl collection to put up on my walls. And she said, okay, well, find one that you want that's a little rare, little more expensive than what your other friends are going to be getting you. And I was like, yeah, sure. And they're releasing the entire soundtrack of this game on 3 vinyl, and you get the game along with it. And so I was like, Mom, I need this video game music on my wall, please.
It is music that you would listen to. Like, people just listen to this music. It doesn't sound like video game music.
No, it does. It's top notch. And it's so perfect for the game aesthetic.
It's interesting because it carries you through things. Like, I was in a really frustrating level. And, like, they're always frustrating. Like, it's not a knock against the game. It's like, you just keep trying it and trying it. But I was just like, ugh. But, like, the music just kind of keeps you going through it. Like, the music doesn't stop when you restart your level. Right. And it's just, you get into a groove of, like, just iterative, like, trying and failing.
Yeah.
That just, like, it just works so well.
Let's note right here that frustration is a mechanic of this game.
Like, yeah,
it is meant to be frustrating.
Yeah, you're supposed to, like, but it does everything else about the game kind of works. That feeling of satisfaction and the soundtrack and everything and the satisfying kind of, like, the kinesthetics of the violence you're doing mm-hmm. work to combat that.
Yeah.
You know, like, it feels really good to bash in somebody's head in this game. Like, I don't know, like, I'm not just into violent games for violence's sake, but this game is so non-pretentious about it. Like, it just, like, this is what it's about. This feels really good. It plays into the messaging or, like, the theming of the game. Like,
yeah,
you know, how this feels good. Like, it just kind of works for me in a way other violence porn games, like, don't.
Yeah. No, this is the only game I think that where violence is the theme. And I guess, you know, there's some games that try and I'm trying to think of that FPS right now where the violence is the theme, but it's all about
Postal.
No. The one where it throws it back in your face.
Spec Ops.
Yeah, Spec Ops.
Yeah.
So this, you know, this doesn't do that as, I mean, to a small degree, but it's not like Spec Ops: The Line, where it's not all violence aimed to then show you the carnage you've done. It does it super subtly, and the game is just about the like being an evil fucker who murders people.
Yeah, it is. It is the expression. So like Spec Ops does a really, really, like this says a similar message to Spec Ops in that way, in a much shorter amount of time. Like Spec Ops has a little bit more going, like it's a little bit more complicated because it's dealing with real world conflicts.
Right.
And this isn't, you know, but they both have kind of similar ways of doing it.
Yeah.
And similar kind of base messages. So if you're a fan of that kind of like subversive kind of theming,
mm-hmm.
This will do it. And same thing, like Little Inferno does that too a little bit.
Yeah.
Like there are a couple different games that have that. That kind of subversive theming, but this one does it as well. It should be noted that this is wildly kind of mixed reviews on this, which is kind of weird. Like people either really love it or people are really not into it, I found.
Yeah.
In looking at reviews and hearing just people on Twitter and such.
And it looks, it looks like critically only a couple people have, or a couple major, you know, game review places have bothered to give it super low scores. And like, you know, they're not, I don't know if it's all hugely, there's a rape scene at the start, and
yeah,
like there's definitely reasons to dislike this game, but if you know what you're going into and you know what the game is trying for, this succeeds in every fashion of what the original was and what they're going for. So
I would go as far as to say that I think that the way they handle that rape scene, like there's a huge controversy about it, and I think the way they handle it is actually pretty tasteful. I mean, I'm of two minds, because one, the game wouldn't lose anything if you omitted it.
Right.
Right? Like, it's not necessary.
I agree.
But they give you an option right up front. They're like, hey, this is going to be in here. If you're triggered by this, here's an option to bypass it, which I think is a good way to handle it.
Yeah, if you're going to put it in the game.
Right.
If you're going to not just, like, be like, okay, this doesn't need to be in here, then you should offer something to that extent where, hey, this has super violent, super graphical, sexual scenes in it. Do you want to turn those off? And it's like the very first prompt in the game, by the way.
Yeah.
So if you've heard any of the controversy, you'll know right away what it's referring to, and you can turn it off.
Yeah, it's so weird too, because it's not like the rest of that happens really in the rest of the game. It's just this one little outlier,
mm-hmm.
you know? Yeah, it is in something like, because I've been anticipating this for a long time, but I'm avoiding spoilers. We got to play this at PAX.
2 years ago.
Yeah, 2 years ago. I mean, it's been in development for a very long time. And, based on that and based on the first premise, I thought it was going to be something very different than it actually is. Like there are scenes, and this isn't really a spoiler, but they're like scenes that like take place in like a war, you know, in the 60s or 70s. And there are scenes that like the way it jumps around, the way it's telling a story, I had no expectation for.
No,
me either. Which is just also has me coming along, because like you wouldn't expect Hotline Miami, for being how mechanics focused it is, to benefit from having story. But it does.
I agree.
You know, like the contextualization of what you're doing like helps and is stringing me along to like get, you know, further motivate me to see more of the game.
This is a minor spoiler, but it's so close to the beginning that I don't think it's worth separating out. That I really like the scene where you are the journalist who's going to meet the mob boss at the club, mm-hmm. or whatever. And at the very beginning, the bouncer's not going to let you in. And so your guy like accidentally kills him. Like it's all like kind of cutscene from it. You know, you're in it, but then he's like freaking out, like, oh my god. He's like trying to CPR him back to life, goes inside, and then has to fight his way to the boss.
And those scenes are really crazy too, because like you come into this, it's playing with player expectation where you're just gonna be a violent bastard, but the character isn't doing that. So like certain characters will be going through and they refuse to pick up a gun. Like they're willing to knock people out, but they won't kill them, you know?
Yeah.
And then what's cool is like you can push them kind of over this immoral event horizon, but you don't have to. Like if you're in one of those scenes, if you give that character and you give him a weapon and have them kind of beat on a guy while he's down, you'll kill him and the screen will get more staticky.
Mm-hmm.
And the more staticky it gets, the more lethal weapons you can pick up.
Oh,
so you can
kind
of like
that.
Drive your guys fucking crazy.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's really, really neat.
Like, I knew you could like, you know, if you had picked up a weapon, once you have someone down on the ground, you can just keep clicking until he completely like destroys the guy. But I didn't pick up on the static.
Yeah, if you do that, the screen gets a red filter. That's and you awesome. Become like murder mode version of whoever you are. There's also a scene that I want to go online after I beat it in case there are spoilers related to it, where there's like a scripted death,
mm-hmm.
and I want to see if it's mandatory.
I think like, it is. It's well, are you talking about you're talking about the early one, right?
It's probably in the middle of the game
because like
you go in, you get to a level and you die, and rather than being able to restart, your character actually just dies.
But it gives you the restart prompt on that one, right?
Nah. Oh,
okay, because there's one death early on where you're playing to someone and you get shot.
Yeah, end. No, this is different than that. Okay, like, okay. This is all in mechanic. And, like, I was just like, if I played that well enough, like, maybe this is a level you literally get one shot at, and something happens if you beat it.
Huh.
Because beating one of these levels in one try is,
that's
you're not going to do it.
Yeah. That's cool, though. I hope there is something different there.
I do, too. Like, I'm really looking forward to people who are better at this and have more time than me, like, really doing deep dives on it so I can research it.
Agreed. And I just want to make one more comment about this. The pause screen is fucking gorgeous.
Oh, yeah.
Like, yeah. What a cool pause screen.
It is, yeah. The whole thing has this VHS aesthetic.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of really neat things with it. And that's what, it's like you're watching a VHS tape.
Yeah, so when you pause it, it's like, it gives the VHS filter over it with your, like, menu on the side that's in the same script as old, like, VHS players would have.
Yeah.
Super well done.
And when you travel through time, it, like, will fast forward or rewind for flashbacks. It looks really cool. So highly recommended. If you don't know the series at all, just pick up the first one on a bundle for free, essentially, and see if you like it. And then if you get through that and like it, you'll like the second one.
Agreed. And if you're opposed to hyper-violent games and graphic scenes and stuff, this is definitely not the series for you. You're not, you're not missing out on anything more than them exploring that in a pretty decent way. So.
Yeah. Yep.
All right, Gary. So some admin stuff. Where can they find us?
Yeah, you can find us at on Facebook at facebook.com/ Comrade Podcast.
No.
Check it out, Comrade.
Yep. Damn it, Gary, you mess it up every time.
I do. Check it out, Comrade. And you also find us at duckfeed.tv/Comrade.
Yeah. The Twitter handle is at Comrade Podcast. Facebook is Check It Out, Comrade.
Yeah. And you can definitely suggest games. This time, we didn't end up doing, we did a couple things that people are suggesting, but I put out a call on Twitter a while back and people gave us a bunch of stuff that we'll probably be taking a look at.
Yeah, we're going to have some time crunchy weeks coming up. So there'll probably be some shorter, kind of quicker looks at some smaller games here coming up. But we wanted to get this one out in the open.
Yeah. Yep. And sorry about the delay. Moving and I just started a new job and all that jazz.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And I think that's about it. So thanks everybody for listening.
Yep. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.